Hi folks, I'm Alan Water and this is Cutting Through the Matrix on the 24th of November 2019. I often, being human like everybody else, maybe almost everybody else, I get up in the morning and I fall into, we all fall into the same thing because we are human, and we fall into the natural way of thinking about things. When you're half sleeping and you get up, and that is the first thing in the morning, and you ponder things that you have to do and they'll come back to you again. And I remember someone recently, in fact, it was an actress, I think, who's got early form of Alzheimer's, and she said that she doesn't mind it so much because she doesn't get up in the morning and worry anymore. And I thought about that. I thought, you know, that's really how we're kept in our place, basically. For those who don't believe we live in a real super class type society, because that's how we live in it for sure. And we're kept by a massive regime of propaganda via all kinds of what seems to be information or media or whatever. And we don't question it. Most folk don't question it. I do. But most folk don't question where it all comes from or why even certain articles are all dumped on you if you turn on the news first thing in the morning, if you're that crazy, you know. But there's method to the madness, because we're kept in our place. That's the old term they used to use in Britain. If you came from the wrong class, you're kept in your place. If you got uppity and you ask questions which you shouldn't ask of your betters, as they say. And really nothing has changed. There's all kinds of betters. There's different classes of betters, sometimes different racial betters, things like that. We all have our betters who often remind us that they are better than us. And then when you quiz them on it, they deny it right away, of course. You know? But that's the hypocrisy of the human condition and the system in which we live. But yeah, get up in the morning and you think about what is reality. Underneath the layers and layers of control. And for those who think you're just living in an evolving system, good luck to you. You're truly indoctrinated and you don't even know it. Most folk are. They have no idea of the money, your own tax money that goes into huge think tanks, working 24 hours a day pretty well across the whole planet, in fact, on ways to make you conform constantly to obedience to the right kind of people. You're told, and you're indoctrinated in Pavlovian style to what people not to even look into. If you do, you're a bad person, you've got thought crime right away. And you'll immediately feel guilty for asking questions and or even thinking them. And that's your self-policing that they prowled on about in the behavioral sciences for years at the United Nations. It's all here. But pretty well all of, I mean, think about it. I was thinking about that really not so long ago. I don't have television. I don't watch television. And actually, maybe that's one of the reasons I think maybe partly sane. But when I do get a little clip or something sent to me by people to watch, this on standard television or some modern series of drama, whatever it happens to be, it's like me looking into a different world altogether. See, I missed all the indoctrination that's gradual and everything that you watch on all these stations and channels. And you've no idea, most folk have no idea that your own tax money goes in to the making of most of those dramas. And we pay for all the insertions of the politically correct updates. We do. In books and dramas and everything, we pay for it all. It's all from our tax money, from the Department of Culture. Every country's got a Department of Culture that forks the cash out, and they decide where they're taking the culture. So we have nothing much to do with it except to absorb it and get poisoned by absorbing it, watching the trash that they dish out for you to accept. And it's all for purposes. It truly is all for purposes which most folk never even catch on to. Do you really think you're living in a world where multi-million dollar companies and movie industries and so on are just out there to make a little bit of profit and to make you smile? Do you really believe that? Look around you at your society. Nobody in the society, and it's been for a long, long time, can go through their family members and maybe even their parents and think that it's all smooth sailing and they've come through things really unaffected and they're hale and hearty, as they used to say, and well. Everybody's got disasters everywhere you look, in their families, in themselves. You went through such a rapid transition of human designed for humans, transitional movements for directions of alterations of culture, and which must still be under control of the authorities. And of course, the best way to do it, the old saying is very true, you don't know you're a slave. People who are in slavery, and this kind of slavery, even Aldous Huxley touched on it too, you become to love your servitude. It doesn't seem so bad, does it? And how many people out there have got their good customer service cards and things like that for their... Folk have given away every bit of privacy that they have for a few rewards. And I used to watch it as a child years ago in Britain, because Britain is a really advanced socialist country for control. And even before they called it socialist, I don't care what term that the system that they actually had was, the fact is it was always under intense control in Britain and quite a few European countries. And they used a socialistic formula of, you're all a collective, all of you, because you're the class system. And you and of course, all of you at the bottom level of the class system, obviously were a collective. You all had to behave the same, be the same, do the same thing, and obey. You all had to obey the same authorities above you, which were very clear-cut who they were. And they never really gave it up. They just decided, those who ruled an empire, remember, a few, these folk based in London, who ran the money system and taxation systems and profited from all the wars which they designed in order to profit from them, all lived basically in and around London. And they all intermarried, these families. I could go into it forever and ever, but you can't really waste much time on it, or maybe sometimes it's not even safe to do so. But the fact is, they designed a system called socialism, where the folk would think that they were in charge of things. Not just for Britain, but for other countries too. Folk have no idea that the group that gave you the British Empire, that morphed into the Lord Alfred Milner Group and his kindergarten and the Round Table Society, ruled it all. It was the same group, the Cecil Rhodes Group too, all merged with it. And they became the Royal Institute for International Affairs and Concerned Foreign Relations. They have a few other names too for special branches in different parts of the world. But they set up the whole global system, and it was exactly the same. Here's your multi-millionaires. Today, it'd be multi-billionaires of their day set up today's system for us, with the unification in the Americas. That was to be part of it. And you've got a Council of the Americas, too, for you can check into all this stuff, how old it is, who set up and all that. And you have the CFR, a branch of the Royal Institute for International Affairs. You have a branch for the Asian Pacific Rim Group. I've got all their different names and addresses here. But what I'm getting at is, do you really think these people, who were incredibly into eugenics and justified their actions across the world in a fashion which was blatantly racist. These folk were racist about the British people, and yet here they were living in London, looking down on the peasant class. That's racist. They thought they were a different species, seriously. And they had no problem, this is what interests me too, they had no problem merging to an extent, or having these great relationships with India and the higher castes in India, because there's so much in common in the way that they viewed the world and the peasant classes beneath them. Incredible. And they all loved riches, etc. too. But with the world wars, which were necessary to create their system of control for a global society, which they would still control, and to lead us into it all, that to bring on world wars, they talked about it, they published their findings on what they wanted, and how to introduce it, and how the world would go into a United Nations type of idea. And then they guide us step by step, with eugenics, into depopulation of certain countries. And it's quite fascinating to see that they wanted to depopulate the countries first, which they lorded over themselves, where they lived, in fact. But not for themselves, but for the people who lived there. It was amazing about the British people, the peasant stock, basically, across the countries. Because with all the deprivation that they had for centuries, and with the horrible conditions in which they lived, with poor hygiene, no running water, all that kind of stuff, which we all know about, it was not a happy existence. But they could, just like today, basically they bring out the military for you every so often, and the young guys would see these guys in brand new uniforms, new clothing, that was really something exotic, and shiny brass buttons and things, and they'd join up And just like today, be all you can be, you know, and they join up and hoping to get some adventure and excitement and get out of the dreary system in which they lived at the time. Nothing was worse than where they lived, generally. Yeah, these old smoky cities, eh? And the poor had been crowded into them for the Industrial Revolution, and a lot of them didn't even have shoes and so on, for goodness sake. So anyway, they used them across the world to conquer other nations. But because they had this ability to be awfully obedient and well-disciplined, they were awfully good at fighting other peoples. So once they'd done it all, you see, after the World War One and Two, the same elite knew what they wanted to bring into the world. And the people they had most to worry about were the peasant classes that they'd use for the stock, for the soldiery and so on. Because of their abilities of cohesiveness in warfare and efficiency. That's why they turned on their own people initially, first. And it was so astonishing when you think about World War II and the deprivation that the people had lived through from the Depression in the late 1800s right in through the World War One in a Depression, right? You're talking about basically famine-type societies that they created because of it and rationing right through the Great Depression, right into World War II and right after into the 1950s. I mean, the folk really were treated like dirt. And at the end of it, they were still starving in Britain. Because then the government signed on to a deal where they'd feed all the conquered countries in this war. And if you look at the photographs of the people back then, say at a beach, they looked like they just got out of a prison camp. These were the citizenry. And yeah, the nice smile on faces, because you've got that cheerfulness, that natural thing that pulls them through. But the fact is, they really were starved. And they had rickets and all kinds of problems with malnutrition. That was Great Britain, the ruling empire. But the people who ruled it all never suffered, even through the rationing periods. They got everything they wanted. They could always get it. They always talked about that, how they could get anything they wanted, and they did. But they were the first countries after that, the stock of the people, to be hammered by massive psychological warfare, never mind the physical warfare and malnutrition. But they were hammered. Because now there were to be a big experimental base for depopulation. And I really mean this. It's an interesting thing you should really look into. Is the copious papers on eugenics churned out by the Darwinian societies and so on in the UK. And all the depopulation meetings that they had. Depopulate. Even when World War II was going on, the King held one in London. On ways to depopulate the stock after the war, when it was finished. It hadn't been finished yet. And you take what happened in the 50s. There was incredible cooperation from certain segments across the world to take charge of the culture. Well documented, too, in different books, to alter the culture in Britain and in the US as well. And of course the British Empire went along with it right away because all the countries were all connected so intricately. And they gave you, initially it was what they called the beatniks. The beatniks who changed the color. These guys that just wore pullovers, had beards and greasy hair and played jazz, this atonal type jazz. And they had, of course, cannabis, dope, you know, marijuana. And they opened up clubs. And they tried to really make the youth get into this cool daddy stuff. You know, that was the lingo that they used. They always give you lingo for their era, so the youngsters catch on to the lingo thinking it's their own, and it differentiates them from every other group. So they go right along with it. Oh, daddy-o, all that kind of stuff. Cool man. And they really pushed it. And they have no idea, and I gave talks about that many years ago, about the groups that set up music. It's a technique of massive control and change the culture. And there was a guy a man in New York City in the 1920s, and the communists sent a group over. This man was he was more advanced in the jazz scene and the technology of it. There's always a technology that goes along with music. And they kidnapped this fella. That book was put out. They kidnapped him and took him over to the Soviet Union. To really work on this, because they saw how this could affect young people. You must always grab the youth, and eventually you can bypass the older folk by ignoring them. and make the youth think that they're actually leading, that they're the avant-garde of some revolution or whatever it happens to be. So it's a cultural revolution. Well, you always go for the music first. Everybody loves music. And when you're young, your ears are far keener. You even can hear higher notes and things like that, which you'll start to lose in your 30s and 40s. So it's very keen. And they can use you and they can alter you to get you to follow things. Now, youth as well are more prone to club together, like an us thing, an in-group. And you can create that feeling you're an in-group, especially if you wear the same gear. And so they gave you the gear, they always gave you the gear to wear, the uniform to wear for every cultural change. So back then it was the beatniks, as I say, eventually after post-World War II, that's really pushed. They tried jazz before, over in Germany, different places from America, and tried to actually get the sexual revolution going. It didn't work too well, because there's always fallout if you don't have antibiotics and access to even abortion, you see. So they brought it back again after World War II, and they gave you the beatniks. So sweaty guys, long greasy hair, who were always stern-looking or stoned or whatever, same kind of thing, and introverted, and with this atonal jazz, but it just didn't take off. Some countries it took off better, right up into the 1970s, like some occasional clubs in Denmark and places like that. But most places in Britain and all that kind of fell flat, didn't work. And they tried to push that on the BBC. Before they had Top of the Pops and Jimmy Savile, they had, I think it was the 6-5 special, and things like that, where they'd give you this Dig Daddy music, you know, Dig It, etc. And it still didn't, wasn't that popular. And so they gave you the Teddy Boys from America. The Teddy Boys was the next step. It was a shorter hair, but kind of fluffed up and all that, and highly shining, like greased and all that. And the longer jackets that would come down halfway to your knees, basically. And it was, again, an Elvis Presley kind of thing. They pushed it at that time, too. And that was to get the sexual thing going again. And Elvis Presley was booed initially in the UK and different places, because a guy doing gyrations like that, like a male stripper, was totally frowned on by society, you know. It really was. But he was trained by the same people that gave you the counterparts in Britain. In fact, there was two guys who trained the youth at the time for music for Britain, and they knew each other, and they worked with a group in the States as well. Gave you your main singers, like Cliff Richard and stuff. Anyway, they gave you that went on for a while, but it still wasn't really, really taken off. I mean, youngsters were going into that stage, but by the time they got to about 17, they were leaving it again. They were just maturing, and that's what you do, maturity. But they weren't a culture that they could be arrested for years and years in the same kind of mode. And so they gave you what they call pop music. Pop music came out again with the same stuff, and they gave you dances where there was no formula for the dance. So you didn't have to touch the partner, which had always been the tradition in all countries, even with folk dancing. It was all to do with getting to touch someone that could possibly be a partner in marriage, but that's how you met people. That was allowed and permissible, etc., to meet them that way. But touching was important. But now you didn't. You just sort of shook around like you're having seizures and stared at each other's feet or knees, you know. And that was a new form. And I thought about that, too, because it was beyond, dancing's supposed to be a happy thing. But suddenly, you get strobe lights and all that. And again, too, I've given talks about the strobe lights and how the US Air Force actually supplied hangars for a group that even knew the Unabomber, by the way. And they worked with the Grateful Dead as well, but they came out with the strobe lights. They used to practice this in these big hangars, different kind of strobes, to try to induce altered states of consciousness with the combination of drugs which they'd supply, and they did use across the Western world. So nothing happened by itself. And this is not conspiracy theory, this is verified stuff. And then they gave you the fronts. You know, the initial pop stuff was still pretty tame because it was boy meets girl type thing and a little kind of chewing gum kind of music and kind of harmless. But then they went to the serious stuff. Then they gave you the Beatles, of course, and it got more and more serious. And as I say, most of the stuff that you see, remember, show business is a performance. Business is always business, but show means what you see is not real. And so the presentation of the characters that they give you made stars by a machinery which you don't even know exists, but that's what the whole thing's about. It's a massive machinery that will make anybody a star if the money's there, or if the culture creators have deemed it to be so. And they do, they still do this kind of thing. It's the same machinery that makes them into stars on movie screens or in music. And of course there's a huge machinery around all these big groups which they've given to you. And of course they put them out as little garage bands. Oh, they're just guys, just garage bands, you know, all that nonsense. But they're all picked years before you ever hear them. And they're trained. A lot of them really were really junior actors, in fact. And they can be picked out of lineups, put together and formed a band. However, they're promoted as like the best of pals because youth like to identify with them. It's a natural thing because they're more in common. They're about your age group or maybe a little bit older, and they're just stumbling along and made it good, and you feel great for them. But you don't know that there's a huge machinery that's made them who they are. That's why a lot of them can't stop, by the way. You don't realize the money that goes into making them to be the stars that you're all going to follow. And they still pay off so much. You wouldn't believe it. They're just part of a massive business, the ones that you see in here. A small part of it, and there's a lot more still paying off all the money. Some of the money went into them, and a lot that they've borrowed too along the way, because they're always blowing more than they earn. And so they can't stop. When they're signed on for these records, they've got to keep producing. You see, so to an extent, their life is not their own. Massive machinery. But what I'm getting at is what you're seeing is step by step changing of the youth. Something they've been at for a long time, starting with jazz and atonal stuff. It didn't take too long. They tried it with the jazz, with the sexual elements, and they brought lots of bands over from the US to Europe and Germany, trying to really get it going. It didn't work too well. And again, the Germans weren't too happy of what was happening to their culture. It seemed to be a deliberate takedown of culture, and it was, actually. It didn't happen by itself. It was a deliberate attack on culture. And yet you have no idea how orchestrated and how in-depthly studied it was, and how it's promoted and produced. You'll see a touch of that in that CBC documentary called Sin Cities, where they glorify this kind of behavior and try to present it all as avant-garde and cutting edge and breaking with tradition, etc. But in reality, when you look at the ones what they did in Germany during a depression, remember, where you had all kinds of women going to end up being hookers. And I say it's absolutely an abusive system where folk are doing terrible things in order to eat, you know. And yet this is hailed as a great breakthrough of liberation. It's disgusting. To me, that is, you know. And so, and again, there had a backlash from Germany. Even Hitler got in because of a lot of things that were happening then, too, with the communism taking over and what was happening in Berlin with against the Sin City, where a lot of its income was coming from drugs and massive kinds of prostitution of all kinds. Big celebrations of it in halls where everybody's stripped off, like mass orgies and so on. And all these Europeans flooding in to pay money to see you, etc. as well, and Americans. But hailed's a great success, as I say. Well, it didn't happen by itself, and it didn't just break out by itself, like it's a time it must come, and it's got to have its day. It wasn't like that. It was planned that way, and heavily financed and directed. But the same system was used post-World War II, as I say, in Britain and the rest of the Commonwealth countries. Now, most people will fall in to enjoying what their peer group and their age group enjoys as a teenager, without thinking too much about all the rest of it, or even the content of what they're hearing, you see. And it's always to do with promoting something which seems to have no consequences. The songs, the early songs, used to have consequences about things, but when bonding was to be destroyed, and you're simply promoting sexuality, that sex without bonding to a partner, that was the agenda, that was the stipulated agenda, and psychologists now admit it all and the rest of it. The two parts in the creation of it, but that would help with depopulation. You see, lots of sex just don't have offspring. The state will take care of that, and they had of course you had the pill and all the rest of it too. But that was the intention of it. So they started off using Britain as a big test subject with the National Health Service and dealing with all the fallout, or with, or even supplying the pill. But then the industry too, for music, had to go the next step and the next step, and they brought in rock, which initially a lot of it wasn't too bad. There was some skill involved and things like that. But then it morphed into this like made for TV stuff, kind of like Spinal Tap, the comedy, where the guys ended up spending more money on their hairdos than Farrah Fawcett, and wearing clothing that was very, they used to call it sissy-ish at the time, a bit of a sissy, you see. That was the terminology that was used. But the intention was to start to blur this whole idea of genders for a time that was to come, and which we're in now, of course. Step by step, you're trained by those who manage societies. There's people who earn millions of dollars a year, individuals, who are the heads of these think tanks that literally plan the future on behalf of the masters who own the planet. And that's how they refer to themselves, you know, at that level. Knowing that the bulk of the populace are oblivious that they even exist, or that their lifestyles are being shaped for them, and their likes and dislikes are given to them, and you have approval and social disapproval about different things too. As I said before, what to think, what not to think about. Don't even look into that problem that might be glaring because it's bad to do so, etc., etc. You're trained all the time. And you're trained into a system where you still think you have freedoms and rights, and this odd deception called democracy, because you've never had democracy. And if you understood the reality behind even what I'm talking about now, music and so on, but the reality behind the human nature of the powerful who run the world, a lot of folk couldn't handle it. We live through eras like Cold Wars and things where lots of folk were killed by agencies on all sides. It's still going on too. It's a ruthless system. I can remember the Umbrella death in London, where it was a Russian defector who'd end up taking residence in London, came down an elevator. It was surmised afterwards that someone with an umbrella, because they knew that the Russians and Soviets had this kind of technology, because the Britain had it too, naturally. But they could actually just fire a tiny little pellet from the umbrella into the person's thigh or something in an elevator. And the guy came down the elevator every day and then stumbled in the streets and died. But someone found in the autopsy room this tiny little pellet just under a little, wasn't even a blister on the skin. And examined it in an autopsy, and found this little tiny, minute it was smaller than about a 32nd of an inch. It had tiny little holes in it where the poison came out, this poison. And if this attendant actually hadn't been so thorough in his observations, because the body had all been passed to some sort of strange death, but he found this afterwards, and then it was confirmed. And so folk deal with, this is how governments really deal with things, but they deal with their own people inside their countries the same way. You've got to get off of this, oh, we've got our rights, and we've got this law and justice. Look at this mess of the US right now. Look at it. The whole world's looking at this. Sometimes, I have to say this, the people across the world and in Europe are more aware of what's happening inside America than people in America and the US. And sometimes you have to stand back outside your own little enclave of reality and see things more intensely and intently, as they really are, of the power plays inside the US for the last couple of years. What really is open rebellion is what you're seeing too. Of what they loosely call the deep state, but it's much bigger than the deep state, because of I won't go too far into it anyway, but the fact is, you can see who's rebelling. And unfortunately for some, it's showing a lot of the people in control of the US. And of course, they're going all out right now to silence any inquisitive voices or demands from people. Because it is so obvious, isn't it? If you end up getting a one-party state, then, which is the agenda, of course, for a global agenda, you have to have a one-party system. It'll have all little categories of special, you know, looking after special rights of special groups and so on, and minorities, and new and old minorities, and old minorities will die off, basically. and they'll find new minorities as time goes on. This is why they'll do it, to make you think that you've still got rights and that, and they still care. But you're living in a totalitarian system in reality. How many folk were asked about free trade to begin with? And it was stuffed down our throats. We live in a post, it's a post-everything society, definitely post-20th century. And 20th century was heavily under attack. It's when most of these things were going on. The destruction of the family unit, the Communist Manifesto, of course. And sexual promiscuity was encouraged without bonding. Bonding was taboo. Massive drug, street drugs and legal drugs getting pushed like crazy during the interim periods of between marriage and so on, and destruction of the unit. And then the end of borders, that's what they're pushing at the moment now too, because you're going through the same agenda. Remember, the withering away of the state was part of the Communist Manifesto too. Karl Marx talked about the state, the nation state would wither away. Well, here you have this, and where have you seen it published anywhere? Like, oh, this, the countries have signed a borderless world. It hasn't been published, not to us anyway. But you're seeing the politicians attack anyone. So they're in the know, but we're not. They're in the know that this is time now to abolish the borders everywhere. So anybody who stands up and still wants to retain a border is being severely attacked by the big political groups out there. It's obvious, isn't it? We know this is in your face. So you're living through an agenda which the ultra-elite want, which has the appearance of socialistic control and socialism, which is the same as the communist agenda, which is exactly what Carl Quigley said. We're often mistaken, he said, for communists, meaning the CFR, the Royal Institute for International Affairs, because their goals have so much in common and their techniques that they use are so similar. Well, it's pretty well the same, except at the top of the elite isn't some politburo that pretends to be elected by the people. It's an ordained by the elite elite. And you have no say in them. You're not even supposed to know they really exist. But it's there, all right. And below it is a huge scientific class working for them in all kinds of areas, in laboratories and think tanks and everything else. So that's the system in which we live. Now, I've prattled on long enough about this. I wasn't going to go into this too much, but except to say, you have no idea that it continues. Most folk is get up in the morning, you have your worries, oh, got to do this, and I've got to do that, like I mentioned earlier, and then you get on with things as best as you can. Because you still have responsibilities and so on. You have to still get through the day and do things. But whatever you do, don't just expect it. I hope you don't just turn on the news and get downloaded with the latest propaganda. Because most of what you're getting today is incredible propaganda. Everywhere you look, it's in your face. And no time at all. Most folk have given up almost all the rights that previous generations fought for. Think about that. Think about it really, really hard. And realize that for privacy alone, most folk didn't have the right to privacy from authorities. And you've given it all up because you got to be kept safe from terrorism, says the tyrants at the top. Give it all up. And then they bring you into a computerized society and a Wi-Fi society. You understand that there's book after book that came out with this stuff from players near the top who love to boast about it. And they mentioned how they're going to bring us all into this kind of society and demolish your privacy and then train you all that this is normal. Isn't it amazing how new normals are created for you? You adapt right into them without thinking, without even getting a clue that massive think tanks have prompted and goaded you and moved you along in a certain direction. You don't even know that's happened to you. You just do it. Who would have thought, as I say, that for discounts at stores, folk would give up all their private information and let authorities across the planet know what everything they're buying and what they're eating and everything else individually and what their interests are for a discount and for high definition. And for all the different ubiquitous appliances of nomadic devices of Internet of Things that you're all getting, you can't get enough of them. Because as long as they're advertised, I want that, you know. And so you've got little hubs there and you've got all your different gadgets speaking to you and speaking to each other. And no matter what you do in the house, it's getting communicated somewhere else all over the place. So what a sad thing, isn't it? It's been too easy to dominate the public and get them to give up all their rights. and for high definition TV and so on, the most hypnotic thing ever devised. Who'd have thought they give up all your rights for pretty lights, pretty flashing lights? Well, these are prettier flashing lights than the old flashing lights. Yeah. Prettier. And they're watching TV sets that are watching them. Isn't that astonishing? And that's why they always let, you know, every 20 years another bunch die off. It's like 20 years. That's how they work it out in sections of us dying off, and the folk won't pass on stuff that's happened to them if they've got the ability to even pass on. Here's an article, here's an example. And I was looking, before I get into this a little bit, I did wonder what you'd talk about, because everyone knows what's happening, as I say, in the States right now. You all know about it. You're going through a psychodrama. You're meant to be involved in the psychodrama. All sides are participating in the psychodrama. And everybody wonders why Trump isn't trying to cut in and allow all the folk who voted him in to cut in and demand and make pass resolutions or even orders in council, whatever they call them there in the States, but pass them to get rights for people to speak and to use the internet safely and all the rest of it. But he won't. And you say, why won't he do this? Well, maybe he's playing a part too. Here's a thought you should really, really consider. The agenda, and I remember talking about this in the 1990s, when Bush Jr. was in, and there was a big kind of a mellowness in society at the time leading up to 2001. A lot of things were happening, and they were even passing omnibus crime bills, which are anti-terrorism bills in reality, in Canada in 1998, in preparation for 9/11 coming along, obviously. But I remember thinking at the time that there's such a void. There's a kind of void that's missing in society at times. You feel it, it's in the air. The reason is because everything that made sense and made purpose has been destroyed. That's part of it, folks. That's a big part of it. And it was all deliberately done. They knew there'd be this kind of despair, in a sense. You wouldn't have purpose for being. You wouldn't get mated up and married and have children, things like that. Things that nature demanded of you, whether you liked it or not. And so they had all these kind of things worked out, these scenarios worked out, and how to use drugs down the road, which we're now in, to take us away from that. And then the wellness programs to try to fill the void that's been left from nature being kicked out of the purpose that it's really there for. So they give you these substitutes, you see, these fake realities to live, or fake themes to live through, etc. But here's one here, this article here. The psychology of privacy in the era of the Internet of Things. Everything that's happened to us was planned to happen. 9/11 was a must-be to push it all through. I think so many of us knew that at the time too. Or maybe not, but I certainly did, and I talked about it too. And this article is from 2017, and it was a CNN report that talked about the recent WikiLeaks document dump. They talked about the Samsung TVs, for instance, that allowed hackers to remotely switch on TV cameras without alerting the owner. Well, the owners often didn't know the cameras were there. But anyway, it says the exposure by WikiLeaks of possible CIA spycraft highlights the unraveling of cherished ideas of privacy at home as we enter the era of the Internet of Things. A world where many, if not all, of the objects surrounding us are smart and therefore accessible to hackers. And you see, they give you terminology too smart, right? Spyware. It's spyware, folks. But it's smart, right? No, it's just spyware. And machinery is machinery. I don't care if it's electronic or not, but the fact is it's quite easy to program any machinery to do what you want it to do. That's what tools are, right? Anyway, it says, are we prepared for ubiquitous computing and its evil twin, ubiquitous surveillance? Now, what I'm telling you too, a lot of the information you get is propaganda, and it's also psychological warfare. Think about that too. Because it's meant to lead you to the inevitable conclusion of inevitability, that this must be and it can't be any different, and the future is just going to be a future with no privacy whatsoever. That's what it's meant to do. So it says here, for seeing the future, the Helsinki privacy experiment explored the long-term psychological consequences of surveillance in the home. And they used different participants and so on and watched them and see how they'd react to being watched by cameras and that, etc., etc. It says technology has served two purposes. They functioned as media centers equipped with TVs, DVD players, Wi-Fi access, and collected, stored, and transferred network data, as well as audio and video collected by cameras positioned around the homes. Living in the tricked-out homes were 12 people, most in their 20s. The one was one 60-year-old, also volunteered to be a privacy guinea pig. And they go through who they were, etc., etc., and how eventually they all adapted to being watched. One way or another, they had little ways to get around being watched all the time or not showing their emotions all the time and so on. This is for society. We see we're rats in a cage being studied, folks. Mm-hmm. This is amongst their greatest concerns that there was a possibility for public viewing of the videos. In particular, some feared that material would be edited with some intention to misrepresent them and be most unhappy participants. If private footage were shown to the authorities, their friends and their employers. And I'll just step in here. You think of all these shows that you've been geared to watch of increasing nudity, under the guise of was it Alone in the Wilderness or Survival or something, and they're all nude and they're dumped, and that's what's meant. You've been trained to be watched all the time through your entertainment and through articles even like this. And the psychological participation and all, putting their findings, as they say, which are really propaganda results, into articles to make you think it's just simply inevitable. Anyway, they talk about this from different, again, professionals, saying you'll just get used to it being observed all the time, and you can't really do anything about it except accept it. And that's what it comes down to, you see. Rather than just call everything spyware, which is what it is. Don't call them smart, they're smart. They're little spyware, folks. That's what it's for. They go through the early parts of the internet, how it used to be different, and you had quite a lot of control over things and so on. But now with all businesses involved in it and want to know what you're up to for their own survival, you're supposed to just accept it all and agree to being watched and tracked and so on. But it's not a bad article. In fact, it's, again, what they're doing. But there's no doubt about it. You stand back and see what's the intention of the article. It's all inevitable, and you just got to accept it. Do you realize, as I say, people fought wars in previous ages for privacy and for rights? Because privacy, not to be watched, was incredibly vital to the human condition. We know that intuitively. We just know it. You see? And even have terms about that. The visual privacy is incredibly important to a lot of people, but it has to be overcome, you see. That's by your masters. That's what it's all about, isn't it? Visual privacy. And they bring their specialist, Bob Briscoe is one of them, research scientist in communication systems. And how we've all had countless benign experiences whenever we've given up our privacy. You have no idea how incredible amount of work going and testing in all of us, because we are just animals to the masters, and it's not just to make money off us. It's for a controlled, predictable society where everybody individual must be completely predictable. That's why they have all the data on you. But I'll put this article up, the link to this article up, for anybody who wants to read it and make up their own minds about it. But as I say, things don't have to be inevitable. You certainly, you individually, you have rights, you see. Most folk will go along with things because everybody else is going along with things. And I know this too, they actually say that conformity is a group thing. And they expect the majority to go along with it. Right down to taking an app. I've got articles to have studied them too, where they've done study after study of getting you to consent to be watched or having your information sent back to them with different apps and so on. Right down to the tick boxes. They'll give you an app, and they'll automatically tick it. There's little tickers there, you see. And how many folk will actually just accept that to go with it? Or they'll give an app and an unticked box, you see. How many, and then the percentage of folk who will still just say yes, okay, and tick it. And then eventually, I think the third or fourth option was they tried it and tried to see if you just tick yes or no. And they give the reasons and the percentages of the folk who saw the unticked box. And that was the least likely for folk to just accept it and have cookies and tick it themselves. Because it was empty, which made you suspicious. And, well, why is it, why didn't they take it off themselves? It must be something really bad that they're hiding here. You see, they all figured out. And the one at the end, yes or no, was actually a salesman's technique. It worked much better. Because even with the ad, you get a feeling they've been prompted, hurried, you see, to say yes or no. It's like a sales pitch. If you don't say yes or no in 5 seconds, that's it. That's the impression you get. The lead up to it through different, very, very hidden techniques to lead you up to that quick decision. And so we say, oh, okay, yes. And that's it. So that was the best performance of all of them. It's just so important to have all the data on us. It's just incredibly important, isn't it? But everything out there, as I say, but now think, getting back to Donald Trump here before my time was up. You're going through a psychodrama, and back to the 90s, as I said before, where they talked about a one-party system. If it could be made, for the public, it could be made to think that everything's just so dysfunctional now, nothing's going to work because the governments just can't cooperate and get things done, etc., etc., then you'll have chaos. You'll have people being fearful. You always create fear, you see. And slaves really are so used to having masters that they get fearful when they think there's going to be no masters, or the masters are dysfunctional or not taking care of business, you see. But it'll come out eventually. It's just so terrible that here's a new system. And if they can bring in a financial chaos alongside it at the same time, they'll bring you the new system. You'll want them. In fact, you'll beg them to give it to you. And it's already, just all they'll do is blow off the dust on it, take off the shelf, blow the dust off, and present it to you, and you'll all accept it. This is how things are done. The new system is so important for the elites, who've been using basically one of their main groups right now, the Trilateral Commission, that the technocrats that go across the planet really getting things done behind the scenes. They're not responsible to electors. They've been using them for years and years and years, since Jimmy Carter's day. And it'd be much easier if you just put the professional experts in charge for a new governmental system. Everything that we were taught to fight before against tyrants, to preserve democracy, etc., etc., you'll be told, you have to go this way because we need efficiency now. Now, here's the thing. In a society that's free, you can't have efficiency. Efficiency would negate all choices and freedoms. You have to have it at a level where things function, but they function towards the human condition, not for the master's efficiency. Now, I just want to go into this article I mentioned before. It says Rubio Cinema, TILIS introduced bipartisan threat assessment prevention and safety act of 2019. They also call it TAPS. And what an amazing program it is too. I knew it would come, actually, I've said before, where they can monitor everyone for a threat assessment. Now, this is going to spread to all different areas of psychology, too, and behavior. And eventually, it'll be down to your opinions. And so, and that's a threat. You see, your opinion might be a threat. Just vocalizing something, or even a thought, or even a question, could be taken as a threat. That's where they want it to go. If you've noticed all the articles about hate speech recently coming to the fore as a front to stop you asking the right questions, or questions which are begging to be asked, it's awfully important to realize what's really going on with these different acts. Very few acts are put out there for the reason they tell you. We're lied to so commonly that most folk don't think about it. Here's an article too. The EU court, the European court, big tech must censor critics of politicians worldwide. I can remember when Bush was in and they had their wars against Iraq and so on. And the whole push by the deep state at that time was something called, it was all hitting against anti-government protesters, anti-government complainers. It was all the different groups inside the states at that time, and there was many of them, that was the alternative to regular media. And radios, and they had all kinds of well-educated people giving their talks about the system and what was happening. It's all gone now. So it's the same thing again, but now they're pushing for all censorship of critics of politicians. It's just another version of anti-government. So It says calling out inept, traitorous and corrupt politicians among Europe's ruling class online is officially banned worldwide. They banned it worldwide, don't we understand this? After usurping authority over the people and nations of Europe, a European Union court just ruled that US-based social media companies must comply with anti-free speech decrees by European authorities. Under the ruling handed down by the so-called European Court of Justice last week, judges made clear that the criticism of a fringe political figure must be censored all over the world, not just inside the EU or in the specific nation where the authorities considered the speech illegal. Critics called the move Orwellian and crazy. The case in question involved Eva Glavishnik Pisek, a far-left Austrian politician with the totalitarian Green Party, who was ridiculed on Facebook by her critics. Amongst other criticisms, she was referred to online as a corrupt oaf and a lousy traitor of the people for extreme political views. Obviously, these were the opinions of the authors, you see. And another critic blasted the Green Party for being fascist, a fascist political party. So anyway, the complaint that should be filed went to court, and so the social media giant, as says, Facebook, which has developed a global reputation for its hostility to free speech and support for left-wing politics, only censored the offending views within Austria. That wasn't enough for Glavishnik Pisek. She did not want anyone anywhere on the planet to be able to read what people thought of her or to post anything, so she appealed. And after winding its way through the nation's legal system, the Austrian Supreme Court asked the European Court of Justice to take up the case. So it is ruled that free speech is ruled illegal in one EU member state. The technology companies must censor it all over the world. So that's where it's supposed to go, you see, and any excuse will do, because I've said before, this is what they try to get stop people from criticizing anything happening in government or the corruption in government and so on before, as anti-government. Now it's just gone into this, they can't criticize politicians, same kind of thing. Germany's online crackdowns inspire the world's dictators. An anti-hate speech law written in Berlin has been copy-pasted by authoritarian regimes from Caracas to Moscow, and that's just another article too about it as well. The crackdown began after 2015 when Angela Merkel's decision to welcome more than 1 million refugees and asylum seekers was greeted with a tidal wave of protests ranging from derision to visceral hatred on social media. The anger migrated from the online trolling and memes of keyboard warriors into actual attacks on refugee centres across Germany. It's much, much bigger than that. The fact is, you're going to lose your rights to say anything. And that's the purpose of the control of the internet and control over what you think and say. And so you're being punished by things. It's also the same as China with its social credit system. You get all the different little tick marks. If you comply, and obey. But if you say anything that's politically incorrect, and they'll always let you know what's politically incorrect, then that's how we're all graded, etc. So the vast majority of the public will always conform. And it's only people who have a sense of justice and a lack of justice really to stand up at all, in all ages, I think. And of course, they're always the problem for those who are dominating you and want to continue to dominate you and don't want you spreading seditious thoughts of freedom around. It can be terrible for controlling the public. Another article, I'll just finish with this too. It's with look at all the satellites that's getting tossed up in the air. This one, this article here is about SpaceX satellites. It says, may block view of the stars, astronomers warn. And it says, after Elon Musk, SpaceX successfully placed all 6 of its first Starlink V09 satellites in the orbit last week. Astronomers and astrophysicists alike have been expressing a concern over the light pollution they could cause. Now, you got to remember that there's some of these characters throwing up thousands of these things, and they've got thousands more to go on. It says, these were just the first 6 of a planned 12,000 satellites from SpaceX, which is going to use them to beam internet to the ground by 2020. Now, have we been asked about this? Are we asked about anything that matters? Like the geoengineering has been going on for years. Were we ever asked about it, what we thought about it, or would we mind? Of course you're not. And yet you keep prattling about democracy, and then you go and vote. Oh, you vote for governments who'll all collectively take away all your rights. It's astonishing. They say that hope springs infernal. Eh? So then it says here, the launch soon sparked discussion. Astronomers talking about how they change how we see the cosmos. Even the spring, autumn, and winter, around half a dozen Starlink satellites will be visible any time up to 3 hours before sunrise and 3 hours after sunset. Depending on how bright they end up being, they'll have a drastic impact on the character of the night sky. It's astonishing that they've been putting up these small fridge-sized, they call them fridge-sized satellites, for quite a few years now. And there's thousands of them up there. Other big players have been putting thousands of them, more of them up there too, and thousands more years to go. There's big competitors in the same field of who's going to dominate airspace and so on. And of course the military will be using it as well, in the militarization space. But it's mainly beamed on us, you know. But again, we're given no... How dare anybody block out... I thought this, even when the geoengineering was invented 2 years and years ago, how dare they do that to all of us without asking our permission or what we thought about it? See, there's a real... These kind of actions show you what they really think of you. You're little nothing peasants to them. I hope you understand that. Little nothing peasants. We must just do what multi-billionaires say, you know. Why? You know. But as I said, there's thousands more. I've got other articles to kind of find right now where some other companies literally put up thousands, and they've got thousands more to go. It's just astonishing. And you can see them flipping across the sky, you know, at night. And I'll just put up one last little thing too. It says more record gains for Greenland's ice sheet. The ice sheet's been growing and growing over the last few years, and it looks set to continue the trend into the next year as well. So it's, you know, all the real stuff that's happening isn't given much of a push because it doesn't go against the bigger agenda, or with the bigger agenda of global warming, you see. But it says total snow mass of the northern hemisphere continues to track well above average, something which simply is impossible in warming world conditions. And it says, too, that NASA recently revealed its upcoming solar cycle, too, because we've got, right now, in cold times, you get historically low solar activity. Of course, the new end says that sun's got nothing to do with heating the planet, but in cold times, yeah, you get very little solar activity, like sunspots, or big massive blasts of radiation through space. But NASA has recently revealed its upcoming solar cycle will be the weakest for the past 200 years, and have correlated previous solar shutdowns to prolonged periods of global cooling. I have a couple of links to that too, perhaps, and I'll put it up tonight as well. But it's astonishing, as I say, eh? Yet there was posts and different newspapers, and oh, forget that last book. Anyway, that's about all time for really, I'm afraid. Again, depopulation, I'll just say this last part, the depopulation things, you have to lower the energy use for the public. Remember, that's part of the 30 measures that I mentioned years ago. They'll take away, they'll increase all the prices of everything until you all can afford is basic essentials, if you're lucky you can get them. But energy for heating and for other purposes, if you reduce them, then we start to get sick. That standard of hygiene, everything falls down the tubes, and we get sick and we start to die off, folks. And then you go for the food supply. That's part of the thing too. Climate change, land use threatens world food supply, United Nations report finds. Now, it's your fault, you see. And they want to have less farms. Even though I've got articles here with so many farms getting denied loans now. There's one article here on Wisconsin. Reveals that the Western District of Wisconsin had the highest number of Chapter 12 farm bankruptcies in 2017. And remember too, folks, to be interdependent, which is the big UN agenda that all your politicians all signed on to, means you're not supposed to be completely independent for your own survival as a nation. You must be interdependent with other countries, so other countries supply things that you need and vice versa. That's what it's all set up to do. Anyway, I hope I haven't babbled on too much here. Just start thinking about things, folks, and realize that we truly are so incredibly micromanaged now with propaganda. The most folk either switch off or just accept the standard stuff they're being fed. It's rather sad, but we've never lived in an age of such intense propaganda, direct from the sources that just churn it out because of our ubiquitous communications devices, as I like to call all the Internet of Things and so on. And you just switch it all off and get a peace break once in a while. That's what you have to do. Think about it. And then really think why things are happening the way that they're happening when things don't make sense. It's as if we're going through a huge psychodrama. And it really is. When things don't make sense, you're going through a psychodrama that's intentional, and different actors play their parts in it. That's intentional too. For myself, Alan Watt from Ontario, Canada, it's good night to me. Your God or your gods go with you.